Everybody, and welcome to the True Crime Squad. This is Katie Weaver. I'm here with my sister, co-host, and partner in crime, Christy Brower. Hello.
Hello. Hey, everybody. Happy Wednesday.
It is easily our favorite show of the week, where we get to be live, though we did sneak in a live yesterday, so...
Well, we did. I mean, we had to. It was an epic moment yesterday.
It truly was. I love it. And of course, that was, talking about the verdict coming back in jury watch for Jennifer Crumbly, where she was found guilty on all four counts of involuntary manslaughter. So that's pretty cool. It's, we were really hoping for that verdict. We're really hoping that'll set a precedent here in the U.S. that might convince people to be more responsible with their guns.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, I don't.
We'll see.
I don't have full faith, but I'm hoping.
We'll see. And then, of course, sentencing for her is on April 9th, and her husband will be headed to trial here later this month. So that's happening soon. Yeah.
Yes, I know. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah.
With that trial.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Me too, Danielle. She said, still thinking about the Crumbly verdict. Me too. I watched a little clip of a Detroit news station today that was interviewing people on the street about it. What do you think about it? And pretty interesting, you know. Some people very much in favor and like, look, she was a shit parent. She didn't help her son. She had this absolutely coming. Other people, this one lady's like, I have 10 kids. I cannot be held responsible for what all 10 of my kids do. I'm like... Just lock up your guns, bro. That's all you're being asked to do. Like,
right. Really? There's a lot of catastrophizing going on.
Oh, man.
But this was a very specific set of circumstances in which they literally just put the gun in the hands of their mentally ill son. I mean, parents are not responsible for everything that their children do. But when you put a gun in their hand, you know.
Well,
that's
a
different story.
And yes, the jury foreperson has spoken two times now. She gave a very quick interview as she was leaving court yesterday, and we're going to watch that. And then she also was on, I believe, the Today Show today. I'm kind of mixed on that. Since she's going public, I'm going to go ahead and share her press conference. I worry for that jury that they should be very protected and kept anonymous because... There are people in this country that are completely bananas over guns and will harass them, will dox them, will be terrifying with them. It'll happen. There will be death threats sent their way if people know that they were on this jury. So I question the wisdom of that. In the little blip yesterday, they asked her name and she declined to give it. But today in the interview, she did tell them that her first name is Alex and that she works at a hair salon. A little bit more forthcoming with her info. I hope she's going to be okay. I don't know. And maybe I shouldn't even be repeating it. But, of course, it went over national news. So who am I? But at any rate.
Right. I mean, if she's going to go on national news and put her face out there, then.
So this is 47 seconds of her yesterday after the verdict.
How it was deliberating.
It was very difficult. It wasn't an easy decision. Lives hung in the balance. And we took that very seriously.
And tell us... did you have to convince each other? Is there anything like that where it was going, maybe?
I will say both sides were well represented.
Oh, okay. Tell me your name.
Nope.
You don't want to tell your name?
Nope.
That's fine. That's
fine.
Can
you confirm you were the forewoman, though?
I was the forewoman.
Okay.
Is there something specific that really stuck so that you guys were debating over for that many hours?
The thing that really hammered it home is that she was the last adult with the gun. And that's where I'll end my comment. Thank you.
If you had heard.
Okay, first of all, I thought both sides were well represented. The reporter, Okay. that was pretty transparent. Yeah. However, okay, so she talked about that Jennifer was the last person to have known to have handled the gun when they went to the gun range, and there was some kind of confusion about that she didn't even get it out of her car because it was James's job to put the lock on it and yada yada. Okay, whatever. But one of the things that she said in the interview today was those words when they asked her, would you do anything differently? And she said, no, I wouldn't change anything. She said those words bounced around the deliberation room a lot. Were very bothered by that she didn't seem to have any kind of remorse. And they were really troubled by that.
I mean, you wouldn't even have chosen not to buy the kid the gun? Like, holy shit, lady.
Right?
Yeah, that blew me away too.
Can you imagine how the parents of the victims must have felt hearing those words?
No, I can't.
Horrified.
It's hideous.
Yep. That was a very stupid thing to say. And again, I don't know if that was coached, if her attorney said, don't, you know, if you're asked a question like that, no, you wouldn't because you didn't do anything wrong. I'm assuming that's where the thought process was, but how it came across was, I don't give a shit that this happened.
Right. Yeah, it was very callous.
I would have stayed home more. I would have paid more attention to Ethan. I would have taken him to the doctor. You know, there's so many things that she could have said. And that's what.
But saying any of those things really admitted her own guilt. Yeah. She could have at least said, I wish we hadn't bought him that gun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we hadn't ran. Right. Bonafide. Right. The fact that they ran. Yeah.
Yeah. They knew damn well they had done something wrong and were in some deep shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. They did. So that's what we know. So I do think it's interesting to hear from the jury. There's a part of me that wishes the jury would never speak up because it always triggers some stuff from the defense like, oh, well, the juror's saying this. Well, then the whole thing needs to be thrown out. You know, mm-hmm. There's a part of me that wishes they would never speak up for the safety of these jurors. I really wish they hadn't spoken up. Mm-hmm. I suspect she's the only one we're going to hear from. I hope that's true, to be honest. But I was very interested to hear that because we were all very troubled by her saying that she wouldn't change anything.
I couldn't believe it.
And I'm glad that they noticed that too, and that was a thing for them.
Well, and because the other part of that conversation was she was asked, "Do you feel like you're a failure as a parent?"
Yeah.
And she said no.
She said no. She also said, I wish he would have just killed us. Oh, yes.
Which is such a gaslighty, shitty thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
But a lot of what she said was really flippant and really harsh. You can see just through her personality that she doesn't really have a lot of nurturing in her, built into her.
I also really think that her attorney had her pretty much convinced that she was going to be free. Was like, this is completely ridiculous. There's no way any jury is going to convict you for this. It's just, no one's going to do that. That's insane. And, you know, really kind of had her convinced that when this was over, she was going to be a free woman. I think she was pretty damn shocked to get marched back out to the jail. I don't think she saw that coming at all.
Yeah, I don't think she did. And I don't think her attorney didn't seem to either.
Mm-mm.
Like, she acted like she was not taking it seriously the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy.
She did. JR said, I wonder if Jennifer's attorney wasn't too tired to bathe today now that the trial is over.
That woman is an oversharer to the nth degree, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just wild.
Caramba. Yeah.
Why would you say any of the things that you've been saying? Like, any of them?
It's tough to say. I don't know, because I'll bet she's got her little appeal fingers going as hard and fast as she can.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Crazy. Oh, that's true, Fran. That was one thing I missed. The jury also thought that Jennifer was not a credible witness.
Well, I mean, the prosecutor caught her in
how many
multiple lies? Yeah.
Multiple lies of conversations or, you know, the exchanges between her and her attorney, yeah. Which that's kind of a troubling spot because they shouldn't necessarily have a peek into exchanges between her and her attorney. But there was that exchange when they were caught and she texted her attorney and said, SWAT is here. The building is surrounded. They're coming in. And her attorney responded, shit. But then and she told them that she was asleep when they bust in and she was woken up to them taking her husband down and him screaming and she had no idea what was going on. So he's okay, but that's a lie. So
like we have the text messages. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Treat Dispenser said, I'd be surprised if she has a successful appeal because Sharon rarely made any clear arguments on the record. True. Yeah.
Yeah, really. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think she's going to get anywhere with an appeal. I mean, they've already been to the Michigan Supreme Court to hold up these charges in the first place. Like, and they're going to slap James hard because he's the man. Mm-hmm. He's the gun person in the family. He's the guy that was supposed to lock up the gun and all that crap.
Mm-hmm. He's also a deadbeat dad with other kids that he is non-supportive of and no contact with. That's none of that's going to look good for James at all.
No.
The only thing, and this is just a prediction on my part, but my understanding is that James is in very poor health. And had had a pretty serious health crisis just a couple of years before this happened, was in pretty poor health. And I wonder if that will be a part of his defense, that he was just doing the best he could, but was not in good health. I believe he had a serious heart issue. So,
Really?
That to me, I wonder if that's what will be the, and again, I'm just, you know, I'm just spitballing, but that to me,
and he'll try to throw Jennifer under the bus as much as he can too, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yep, so there's that. But we have so much more to talk about, but that's all the time I want to give to this one. But let's see, Christy. Oh, I have to share this really quick. In a social media group that I'm in around the Ruby Frankie, Jody Hildebrandt situation, someone actually had the nerve to post in one of those groups today. I think some people on here act like they haven't made mistakes before. Sure, Ruby made a few mistakes, but to me, I think she will learn from this, especially since she doesn't have Jody leading her down the wrong path. I saw sincerity in her court hearing when she said, "With my deepest regrets." You could tell that was a genuine apology. The fuck? What are you talking about?
What?
Just can you even? I don't actually have any news about them. I just saw that today and was
that is insane.
Dumbfounded.
Mistakes? Serious child abuse. Yep. That's not mistakes.
Mistake is forgetting to pay a bill. A mistake is dropping something.
Right. This is not, you know, allowing your therapist to tie your children to the floor in her basement. Like that's not the same thing.
Not at all. And people absolutely went crazy on her, as you can imagine. I never even post in those groups. I just like to see what people have to say, but that's correct. That is a very Mormon. Yes. She's going to learn from this. She made
that's
a
mistake. That's so true, Sherry. It is. Thank you for saying that.
Yep. For sure. So anyway, that's gross. Connie, in fact, let's head there next. Let's talk to us about the best case.
Oh, I will. But first, I have a little show and tell for you guys.
Oh, I forgot.
I have some new things for Fidget Whimsy. So Fidget Whimsy is my little fidget toy shop over on Instagram. And I've got this little dolphin. And look at her little shaker bottle is in her head and it's shaped like a star.
I am dead. She is so cute.
Isn't she so cute?
So much.
I'm going to visit a friend in Oakland this weekend, and I made this one to take to her, but I can certainly make it for anyone else, and she can be, you know, any color combination too. But isn't she cute with the little star in her head?
So freaking cute.
And then I do have now my little hippos. So this one's purple, and she has a little shaker in her belly. And I just think she's so cute. And then I got a bear. This is a little bear that has a little heart on his chest. And I'm trying to put the shaker bottle like right behind the heart.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And then just one last thing, because, you know, I cannot stop. His little shaky heart. Is this crow skull. And I just poured one today just to test the mold, but I'm going to put a shaker bottle in the head. But I think this little mold is so cool.
I love that.
So lots of new pictures coming out tomorrow on my Fidget Whimsy Instagram. So come check it out. I'm having a lot of fun, and I'm just going to keep making more cool shit because I'm loving it.
I love it so much. The star-shaped shaker, by God.
I know.
So
cute. Isn't that so cute? You know, and I have a bunch of other shaped shakers now too. So you'll be seeing others showing up. But I thought that star for the dolphin was so cute. Okay, well, let's talk about Jeremy Best. You know, Idaho is a small place, guys, and we don't have a lot of attorneys. And so you may remember we told you last week that prosecutor Rachel Smith was stepping down from Chad Daybell's case. She was with the case all the way through Lori's trial up to now, assisting the prosecutors because she's an experienced death penalty prosecutor. And, you know, this was kind of a new thing. And our attorneys, our prosecutors around here hadn't had a lot of experience with that. Mm-hmm. Well, she has stepped down from the Chad Daybell case just in time to be hired by Bailey Smith, who is the prosecuting attorney in Teton County, to assist her with the prosecution of Jeremy Best. And they say that this was not planned, like it wasn't a swap, that her leaving the Daybell case was already a planned thing. But then it turned out that, oh, hey, Idaho's got another really terrible murder, multiple murder that we need help with. So she will be... She's already been, says she can start working on the case, and then she will be appointed pro hac vice. And that is just it's a legal term that means that an attorney can be added to a case even if they don't have license. They're not licensed in the jurisdiction. So the prosecutor is licensed in the jurisdiction. So her job is basically to assist the prosecutor, which is exactly what she did in Lori Vallow's trial.
Yeah.
So just very interesting stuff, you know, and those cases aren't that far apart. Those counties are not very far apart.
No.
Fremont and, Madison and Fremont. And
Madison and Fremont and Teton all touch each other. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of crazy.
Okay, help me out, though, and maybe I've missed this. Have they already declared that they're going to seek the death penalty?
No. No.
Okay, that's what they've
still got time. They've still got like 6 weeks. But it's assumed that they will. I think it's I don't think there's any reason to think that they won't.
Well, this I know that probably a clue that they are.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Archibald has put in a formal request to the prosecutor attorney to not seek the death penalty in this case because of the mental health circumstances, but I don't think that's going to hold up, unfortunately.
No, I don't.
I mean, I agree about the mental health issues, but oh, Christy, I'm so glad. Christy says, I love my kitty fidget. I'm so glad you got it.
Awesome. Yay.
That's great.
Very good. Hey, Karen. Yeah. All right. Well, there, that is that. Let's talk about Adam Montgomery. So Adam Montgomery's trial is starting this week. Adam charged, of course, with second-degree murder, second-degree child abuse, abuse of a corpse, several things along those lines, right? And so they started jury selection yesterday. Today, somebody was too cool to come to court. He refused to go.
Right.
So they carried on without him. And the first thing that happened is his attorneys made it clear that Adam is going to go ahead and they're saying plead guilty. He's not, this is not a plea deal. It's not, unfortunately, it's not. I wish it was, because then maybe they could squeeze him for the location of poor Harmony's body. But it's not quite a plea deal, but they are acknowledging his guilt on two of the charges. And those charges are abuse of a corpse and falsified evidence. Or falsifying evidence. So, of course, so it's kind of, this is kind of odd. But yes, he's saying, okay, yes.
It's really odd.
I really did do those things. I'm guilty of those things, but I'm not guilty of the rest of this. It sucks because if he was actually pleading guilty to those things and this, they were off the table, then maybe they could at least squeeze him for the location of Harmony's body if it's even possible to recover it at this point, which I suspect it probably is not. But at any rate, so that's what happened. Now, the judge said, listen, apparently he doesn't have to be there. And that must be a law in New Hampshire, because in most states, you do have to be there. So the judge said, if you're not going to be here, you have to let me know 48 hours in advance so that I can not schedule your transport. Because we had transport at the jail to pick you up today, and you refused to come. So we have to know in advance that you're not coming.
I can't believe they're letting him not show up.
He should have to be there. He should have to look in the faces of those jurors. He should have to show up. Unbelievable. Right?
Remember when Lori Vallow tried to not show up to her murder trial? And Judge Boyce was like, oh, hell no. You will be here every day.
Lori wants to leave. Nope.
Sorry. You have to look at the horrendous pictures of your dead children. You did that, bitch. Yeah.
You get to be here for every second of it. I can't believe it's optional. I'm dumbfounded.
I think it just is a state by state thing. That I some guess. States allow the choice, others don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's disgusting. He's pleading to destruction of the body and all that. But he's not. It's so stupid.
Right. So what's like going to happen? Yeah. Is he and someone of you said
going to see him as not guilty of the murder if he says he is guilty of those other things?
Well, like Lydia said, I think he's going to blame the wife. Yes. I think there's going to be a whole new narrative come out here that either they were just so poor and they were living homeless in their car and Harmony froze to death or Harmony starved to death. Or Harmony was really sick and they couldn't take her to the doctor and she died and they didn't know what else to do. And it's one of those things, I'm sure, that's what's happening. But absolutely ridiculous. Yep. No, JR, you are talking about Nicholas Alavurdian. And he is on our list today.
Oh, so my gosh.
Last Tuesday, well, two Tuesdays ago, he was supposed to be in court. And as you know, he refused to come.
Yeah.
And the judge said, be here next week, bitch, or we will assert force. Well, he did not come last week, but it had been now assigned to a new judge who said, be here next week, bitch, or we will assert force to get you here. So he did show up in court yesterday. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a good, a clean audio of it or a clean video of it. He did, of course, speak in his old English accent. He did make sure the judge knows that he is actually a man named Arthur Knight, a poor little orphan from Ireland, certainly not who they say he is. But something happened that I think kind of sucks. It's explained, but it still sucks. One of the charges was dropped.
Yeah.
So there was a misdemeanor sexual battery charge that was kind of thrown on in the end of a battery. So the warrant says that he raped a woman in Orem, Utah in September 2008, and he committed sexual battery against another woman that same fall at his Orem apartment. And there's a charge that he raped a woman in Salt Lake City in December 2008. Well, apparently you can't get extradited for a misdemeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And because they didn't extradite him specifically on that charge, because they couldn't, they've had to drop it. So he's still got two felony charges hanging over his head with some pretty good DNA proof. That's how we ended up in this situation with him in the first place.
Right.
But they did have to drop one charge. It was a misdemeanor. I watched a news article about it this morning that said that the prosecutor did say that he has been in close contact with that victim and she understood what was happening and why. And it's just, unfortunately, it just is what it is in this case. But they do mm-hmm. still have two felony sexual assault charges pending against Nick Aliverdian, but the misdemeanor has been dropped. But yep, he was still in court keeping up the same charade as normal and doing the whole, like he did last time, like leaning into the mic, like, Your Honor.
Yes.
That weird.
Can barely get enough breath to speak and all that mm-hmm. shit.
Yeah.
You guys are right, though. I mean, you gotta be impressed by the commitment to the bit.
Mm-hmm.
That dude shows up with all that bullshit every mm-hmm. time.
Yep.
It is so crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you imagine what it must be like to be his attorney? Do you think he's pulling that bullshit the entire time with the attorney too? I would imagine he is.
Dude,
we have your DNA. We know who you are.
Right. We have your DNA. We have your fingerprints. We have your tattoos that you were not mistakenly given while you were in a coma in a hospital in Scotland. Because nurses practically never do that.
Yeah. Right. Like, pretty much never. He was convicted of a sexual assault in the United States. So his DNA was already on file.
Mm-hmm. In New Hampshire, I want to say.
I think it was New Hampshire, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like, dude, there's no, we know you're not Arthur Knight. Like, you can keep this up forever and go to prison like this, I guess.
And also, there is no Arthur Knight. There is no Arthur Knight.
No.
It is so crazy. Kung Fu said this creeper could have had a brilliant career in improv. Well, don't forget, his stepdad that raised him is an improv guy. He's an impersonator. Not improv. He's an impersonator of...
Engelbert Humperdinck.
Engelbert Humperdinck. That's his job.
Yeah.
So, was Nick just raised kind of as a theater kid or what? I don't know.
I don't know. But it's so bizarre that they have the DNA and they have the fingerprints. Like, dude, come on. Just let it go. Like, we all know who you are, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we just keep doing this. It's so stupid.
Mm-hmm. He's a lifetime method actor. No, Treat Dispenser right? said, I just imagine him trying to stand up every time I hear his name. In that interview when he tried to stand and fall back in his chair. And
so dramatic. They're
like, there's nothing wrong with this bitch. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what's up. So he's not doing court again and now until March. So... we still are planning on going to Salt Lake and going to one of his appearances. At some point, we'll probably wait until it's less of him appearing from the jail on a monitor and more, you know, in the courtroom. Yeah, him
actually being in the courtroom.
But he's apparently giving up.
Less snowstorms also, because we've had a lot of them.
Weather sucked, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we can't wait to go down and spend a few days with our dearest sister cousin, Amy. And
yeah.
Go shop to some and court. Eat amazing food and go to court and have some fun.
Yeah.
So that's what's going up with that dumbass.
Yeah.
Let's see, Christy, talk to us about the Trakonis trial.
Yes. Okay. So today was a pretty important day in court, I think, because this is day two of having this particular employee of Fotis Doulos's on the stand. And if you remember, this is the guy who was asked to replace the seats in Fotis Doulos's truck.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this?
Yeah.
So He worked for Fotis Doulos during the time that they were going through their divorce. And so he'd witnessed a lot of things. So, oh, that's right. This is the thing. It wasn't Fotis Doulos' truck that he replaced the seats in. It was this guy. So his last name is Jiminy. And Fotis
like
drove...
Jiminy Cricket? Jiminy?
Well, it's G-U-M-I-E-N-N-Y.
Oh.
I'm saying Jiminy. I'm not sure.
I'll allow it.
But he drove... Fotis drove Jiminy's pickup on the day that Jennifer was killed.
Wow.
Yeah. And so things got real sketchy because he's immediately kind of involved with this guy. So he testified that in the week after Jennifer disappeared, Fotis had the pickup cleaned inside and out at a car wash and then pressured Jiminy to replace the front seats of the truck with different seats. And got like real weird about it. Jiminy was like, I don't understand. Like, what's going on? And here's what Fotis said. He said, don't worry about it. There's nothing going on. I just want to clean everything. The police might come in. They find something. They destroy my name, destroy the company name. Oh, that's not sus at all.
Oh my God.
Jiminy also said, when he asked Fotis specifically about replacing the seats, because Fotis had wanted him to then get rid of the seats that he was replacing. Mm. So this was a really important part of the evidence way back when this first happened. So Fotis, you know, got real shitty about it. He said, can we not talk about it? Can you just do it? And he kept pressuring him and pressuring him. So he did replace the truck seats. But he kept the old ones because he was just not sure what the hell is going on here. And he turned those over to the police. And guess what? They had Jennifer Doulos's blood on them.
Wow.
Fotis and Michelle are terrible things.
Yeah.
Very dumb. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but there were a few other things that came out. So the defense attorney tried to say that all of the conversations that Jiminy had with Fotis Doulos were hearsay and wanted and requested a mistrial. Mm-hmm. The judge said, no, these are all permitted and bye-bye. Mm-hmm. So, but there were a few other things. He said that he heard Michelle Traconis saying some real disparaging things about Jennifer Doulos. At one point, Fotis had to put down his dog who was ill, and Traconis said that Jennifer Doulos should be buried next to the dog.
Wow.
In a conversation with Jiminy a week before the disappearance, Traconis was upset that she and her, it was a week after the disappearance. She was upset that she and her daughter's photos had been posted online and she was getting connected with this situation. And she said she was going to kill Jennifer Doulos when she reappeared.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. So really interesting stuff because he witnessed quite a bit and he knew that this was, sketchy as hell, like the whole thing getting, and he was like really difficult and an ass about getting rid of those stupid truck seats. Like that's when he was
so
like, what the fuck?
Weird.
And that he drove Jiminy's truck rather than his own.
Can you imagine loaning someone your car and then having him come back and be like, yeah, so you got to replace those seats right this damn minute?
The cops might show up. You know,
what?
Excuse me?
Wowza.
Yeah. So really important because he, you know, they're presenting a lot of evidence around Fotis, but they keep being able to connect Michelle Traconis back to those very things.
Yeah.
Also, Jiminy was asked to write a timeline. Remember the timeline that Jennifer or that Michelle and Fotis wrote? They wrote it together so that they could, you know, be very clear about what they did. And they had to make a big point of that they had sex that morning and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. On the day that Jennifer went missing. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently they asked Jiminy to do the same thing. And he said, what am I supposed to do if the police come talk to me? Do I pull out this piece of paper and start reading off what I did? Like, all of it. He knows it's sketchy. He knows this is a bunch of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You can really, you know, tell that he could tell all along. This things are not good here. Something's wrong.
Wow. So,
it's good. It's good. It's good testimony. It's good, you know, connecting things together and the whole thing about the truck seats. I mean, that's so damning.
Well, isn't he the witness too that they tried to impeach today, but kept looking through their shit for like 20 minutes and couldn't find it in their notes and stuff till they finally had to give it up?
Yes. Yes. Because then they tried to say that all of this stuff was hearsay and they wanted a mistrial, Your Honor. Because all the stuff that he had said, you know, was just hearsay. And the judge said, no.
Your Honor, he's making my client look guilty.
Yeah, it was pretty much that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he paying to replace the truck seats? I don't think so. He was just pressuring the shit out of this guy. He needed to go do it. And I think I remember a different article that I'd read about this before is that he told him to just go get some used seats. It doesn't matter what they are. Just get rid of those ones and be sure to throw them away too. Jiminy's like, well, I'm not an idiot. I will be keeping those seats.
Note to self, I like these seats.
Yeah.
Just go get Note any self, old rotten garbage.
This is
garbage.
My truck. Yeah. You killed your wife in my truck, you dumb bitch.
Holy shit. Yikes.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, but his testimony, I think, is really important.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of connections.
Definitely. Wowza. Okay, well, we'll continue to keep an eye on that shit show. We're going to hop in our time machine and go back 2 years, 2.5 years now, to the death of Ariel Kalua.
Yeah.
Or Ariel Sellers. Ariel Sellers, Isabella Kalua. Ariel was a 4-year-old little girl in Hawaii. Many of you remember this case. We've talked about it a lot of times. Her parents announced that she had gone missing, that they woke up one morning and she just wasn't there. This just keeps happening. This was the year of the 4-year-olds going missing too.
Wander away.
Yep. In the same window of Harmony and some of the others. And yes, that she was known to wander at night. It was one of those, of course. So the first thing that the authorities did, which is what they always do, is they took the other kids into custody. And the kids in that family are all bio siblings that have been adopted by the Kaluas. Mm-hmm. And they were due in court the following week to finalize the adoption of the youngest, of the toddler. And so suddenly they have a missing child. Well, once they got the kids into custody and started talking to them, they discovered that Ariel had been dead for a good month or more before they had actually said she was missing. And they learned from the kids that Ariel was being kept in a dog crate in the bathroom that mom bought on Amazon with her mouth and nose duct taped so that she wouldn't go and sneak into the kitchen and steal food at night because they were not allowing her to eat. There had been multiple reports of her being injured. Some of her bio family saw her walking into Walmart with them one day and was dragging one of her little legs like it was broken. Every time anyone saw her, she seemed to be hurt. She was very, very skinny. She wasn't taken care of. There had been multiple reports, according to various people who had said they had called CPS to make a report because this little girl didn't seem to be okay. So, of course, the parents were arrested and have been in custody ever since. Their trial was supposed to start, well, about 4 times now. It was also supposed to start in January. It's been kicked out again until sometime later this year. It is very, very frustrating Well, there's some stuff that came to light right now that it's mind-boggling to me. And big props to listener Kat, who sends us articles and things when she sees them, because she lives there. And unfortunately, national news has not covered this case well at all. Yeah. And so we depend on people who see stuff to send it to us, because we probably won't see it. So thank you very, very much for that, Kat. We appreciate you a lot. I found two things. She had sent us a link to something from the Hawaii Free Press, which is it's a note by Stephen Lane. Stephen Lane is the court-appointed special master in the Kahlua case. So I'm going to get back to that. But from that, I did a little searching, and I found another article that helps us to understand a little bit about what's happening right now. So people in Hawaii are pissed off. They are over this because this case has dragged on for way too long. This was shocking child abuse. It's shocking on the part of CPS that doesn't seem like they really did their job. Like, it's just bad all across the board.
It is.
So partly because those kids had grandparents that totally would have taken them, but were never given the opportunity to. Grandma, I believe mom's mom, the mom's bio mom, they'd been no contact for a few years because the bio mom and bio dad had both been addicts. They'd been no contact. She lived on a different island. Mm-hmm. She's a freaking social worker that works with children in the courts. Like, she was absolutely equipped to and would have taken these kids, but was never given the opportunity to. That was one of the first missteps that, why were all these kids in the system and all being adopted out to this other family when they had family that wanted them, but right. were never given the opportunity to even be vetted for that?
We've heard that a lot. We heard that in the West case too.
Yes. Yeah. So here's what's happening. There's a man named John Hill who is, I believe he's a reporter that works for Honolulu Civil Beat. So he's an investigation editor at Civil Beat. So John has been trying for 2 years to get the Department of Human Services to account for its actions in Ariel's death. I'm sorry, you guys, Ariel was 6. I said she was 4. She was actually 6.
Yeah, she was a little bit older, but yeah. Not much.
Yeah, she looked like she was 4. She was tiny.
She did. She was so tiny. Not being fed, obviously.
So basically, the Honolulu Civil Beat is saying that federal law and state regulations require disclosure of minimal information, at least minimal information, when children die or nearly die as the result of abuse and neglect. But DHS has refused to unseal any of these records. And for 2 years now, John Hill has been trying to get these records. He's been writing articles about it. He's been trying to put some pressure on because he's saying, we need to understand what happened here. We need to know why this all went so sideways and who's right. responsible for this and what is happening. So recently, a center called the Public First Law Center has picked up this case. They have now taken it to court and they're filing motions to unseal the foster and adoption records in this case. That's huge. So they're asking the family court to release the case dockets in the foster and adoption proceedings to understand how this happened and why.
Yeah.
So they want the court to show the court's factual and legal basis for placing Ariel with Isaac and Lahua Kahlua in the first place, who, of course, renamed her Isabella. That would include the input the judge got from DHS and others. They also want to get any reports filed by the special master in the case, Steve Lane. Steve Lane was appointed by the court to ascertain whether Ariel's estate or surviving siblings have grounds to file a civil lawsuit. So the special master he's in charge of some things legally between Ariel's estate and others.
Mm-hmm.
And also for the other kids, because the other kids also needed, they have to have a special master to kind of be in charge of what happens to them now.
Right.
Okay. So we know that this is happening. We know this is getting ready to go to court. We know that these records just may end up being unsealed now. They should be. And so the motion says what happened, what remains hidden from public view are connecting the facts that explain how this happened. How did a state-sponsored adoption place a young girl in the custody of a couple that murdered her? Only by critical examination of what happened can our community ensure that no other child meets Isabella's fate and start to restore public trust in adoption processes that, from all appearances, went horribly awry.
Yeah.
So it's good. This is a very good thing. This is something that's going to finally start getting some light. So what happened from that was this response from Stephen Lane. So Stephen Lane in the Hawaii Free Press just today published this editorial piece. And this, you guys prepare to be appalled. So he's the special master. He is very, very frustrated with the courts right now because Isaac and Lahua still retain their parental rights of all of the children that were in their care. We're talking about, I think, four kids from prison or jail, sorry, for the last 2 years. They still have parental rights over these kids.
That is disgusting, man.
Those kids are witnesses. Those kids
are victims. That's why they know what happened to Ariel.
Yeah. And they are still, through their counsel, allowed to call the shots about what happens with these kids. It is unfathomable.
It is. So it's terrifying.
Yeah. So here's what he says. He says that, well, in one case, he said one of the children was forced to spend more than a year in detained custody, not because she had done anything wrong, but because the state of Hawaii was unable to secure a suitable foster family for her, largely due to the running objections from the imprisoned Kaluas asserting their parental rights through counsel. What?
Yeah.
Being they managed to keep this child in...
Fuck with this kid?
Yeah, in detention, where she never belonged.
No.
It's just unbelievable. It's
horrifying.
He says that he, in one of the kids' cases, he had all lined out a really prestigious public or a private school that where kids live, you know, and go to school type situation that were going to scholarship her and give her this huge opportunity, as well as the counseling services and stuff she would need. And he was unable to place her there because the Kaluas objected.
How in the
hell
do they have any right to be making any decisions for these kids right now? Why are they not in the custody of the state? I don't understand.
I mean,
they are in the custody of the state, but why is the state allowing these people to make decisions about these kids?
So they have been under the care of Judge Jesse Hall. This is the family court judge who approved their placement in the first place with Kaluas. She suddenly recused herself recently in the family case matters, family court matters, without explanation. So now they've been assigned to a new judge, family court judge Brian Costa. So there is hope now that he will go ahead and sever their freaking rights so that better decisions can be made on these kids' behalf. Not that good decisions have been made by the adults that were in charge up to this point, but are you even kidding me?
That is terrifying. These poor kids, they've been through so much and are just continuing to be re-victimized.
Yeah. Yeah, right, Jessica. They're not safe from these people no matter what. Yeah. God. So that's what's going on in Ariel Kaluuya. We'll always continue, or Ariel Sellers, we'll continue to keep a very close eye on this case. And again, thank you to our Hawaii listeners that send us stuff when they see it.
Yes,
we appreciate it. It's very appreciated. So this will actually be going to court. I think the first appearance in this is this month or in March. It's coming up really soon. So hopefully we'll at least see those kids, you know, the state finally start doing something right by them.
God, I hope so.
Me too. Christy, talk to us about Brian Smith.
Oh my gosh, you guys. So this is a case that is from back in 2019. And we didn't cover it. We didn't know about it at the time. But this man is in his trial. His jury selection is happening right now. So this man is Brian Smith, and he is accused of murdering two Indigenous Alaskan women in like 2018 and 2019. So let's see. I want to tell you their names and show you their pictures. Give me 1 second so that I can remind myself which one is which. Okay. I'm going to tell you more about it and then I'll figure it out as I talk. So what happened is these women were both Kathleen Henry and Veronica Abichuk. So Kathleen Henry was killed in 2019 and Veronica Abichuk was killed somewhere between 2017 and 2018. These women were both experiencing homelessness and kind of were loosely estranged from family that people didn't necessarily know where they were. And so I know particularly Veronica was reported missing, but the family hadn't seen her in quite a few months by the time that had happened. But this is Kathleen Henry. And we know a lot about Kathleen's death, and I'll tell you why. The only reason that Veronica Abichuk, and this is Veronica, the only reason that her death is associated with Brian Smith is that he admitted to killing her. He's actually admitted to both of their deaths, but, you know, is still going to put everyone through a trial. Mm-hmm. So what happened is that the police received an SD card that had absolutely horrendous photos and video of Kathleen's murder and torture. And even after the fact, when he was discarding evidence and stuff.
Yeah.
So the person who turned in the SD card lied to the police about how they got the SD card initially. It was a woman who came in and said that she found it on the street.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been some concern about if they could even use the SD card, because the SD card literally shows Brian Smith murdering Kathleen Henry.
Yeah.
Well, the story has now changed. This woman was a prostitute, and she says that she was actually in his vehicle with him. Mm-hmm. And he got out of the car to go to an ATM to get money to pay her. And she was basically rifling around in his center console to see if there was anything to steal. And she stole the SD card.
Yeah.
She took it home with her. She looked at it, saw what was on it, was then terrified. Mm-hmm. It took her about a week to turn it into police. I think she was really afraid of getting involved at all.
Sure.
So, you know, there's been some question about whether that was admissible. The judge has now said that it is admissible. I mean, the problem with it is that, like, it's Brian Smith. He's on the video, you know, like he's filming himself doing this and you can hear him talking and stuff. It's not like there's a question of that, but the defense has tried to pull some stuff about chain of evidence. And so now the woman who turned in the SD card is testifying trial to say, this is what happened. This is how the SD card came into my possession. This is what I did with it.
I'm sure that's the only way they're able to get that in, but good on her. What a baddie. So, yeah. I'm sure this is, whole thing has been absolutely terrifying for her.
I'm sure that it is. And I really feel for her because, I mean,
oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So let me tell you a few other things about this case that I think are interesting. So Brian Smith is actually South African. And there are some conversations between his wife and himself on the jail phone that they are admitting, which you don't always hear that that's allowed. But yes, it is allowed. So he's told her some things as well that I think are interesting. But he totally admitted to the police what he'd done. And he admitted to both of these cases. In the video, in one place, he's heard saying, people in my movies always die. And you need to know when you're being serial killed.
What?
As he was killing Kathleen Henry. Yeah.
Oh, so, my God.
I mean, he, by definition, he's not a serial killer at this point because he's got two victims, but it makes you wonder.
Right.
Does he really only have two victims? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway, his jury selection is going on right now and his trial is about to start, but we're going to follow that closely. These are two Indigenous women who Kathleen Henry's body was found just laying on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Veronica, her skull was found and it was actually misidentified as some other missing woman until Brian Smith admitted this stuff and they went back looking and actually determined that that skull did not belong to that other woman, but was in fact Veronica Abchek. So yeah. For their family's sakes, they have family who are heartbroken and who have been waiting a long time. He's been in jail since 2019.
Oh my God.
Awaiting trial. And you know what COVID did? We've got so many of these that are happening this way now. Mm-hmm. That they've sat all the way through COVID and anyway, it's just disgusting and he's scary as hell. And I do really question how many victims he really has.
Oh yeah. So I think he also could be a real shibusiness in court.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I think that's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See how that's a thing now? If I say he's going to be a real shibusiness in court, everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Or if I say he's going to be a real Darrell Brooks in court, you know.
Oh, God, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you say he's going to be a combination of shibusiness and Brooks, then you know everybody is screwed.
Or from now here on and now ever after, if we say that.
And you know who that is? That's Sarah Boone. That's who that is.
Oh, my God. Sarah Boone is trying to fire her attorney again, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, from now on.
Never go to trial.
For the longest time, we've always wondered if people went to the Mark Means School of Law, but now we really also have to wonder if they went to the Shannon Smith School of Law, Shannon Smith School of Law.
Right.
Because that too.
Right.
Shibrooksness.
Yeah. Awesome, Irene. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Expect Shibrooksness. Voluminous Shibrooksness. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Shibrooksness. Or the, I don't know. This is the other one. This will now be the Judge Goal School for Judges because.
Oh my God.
Holy shit. Delphi just never rests and it shouldn't.
No.
But here we are. So, in news that will surprise absolutely no one, Judge Goal, without any kind of a hearing whatsoever, decided to not recuse herself. She said the Supreme Court didn't recuse her, so why should she?
That's what I figured she'd say.
Yeah.
Because it's true. I mean, they could have pulled her off this case and they didn't. So that's emboldened her to stay on it.
It's really sad. She should, out of decency. She should, out of the fact that she has completely lost the trust of the defense. She should because of all the mistakes she has made. But okay, here we are. So she says she's not going anywhere. So one of the things that's happening, you know, because these attorneys were pulled off of this case for 3 months and then slapped right back on, they're behind. They've missed some deadlines that, you know, they weren't even on the case for, but they're trying to ding them for. The prosecutor is being such a douchebag. Oh, and at any rate, there is a hearing coming up, I believe, on the 12th that is supposed to be a hearing about removing them both because of those effing pictures. And they're like, we don't have any time for this right now. We need to continue this. So they both filed for continuances. And guess who just hasn't bothered to respond? Judge Goal. So we're just kind of waiting on that. So now they have had to, again, have an attorney come forward on their behalf. So their counsel is now, has filed with the court, a motion for summary denial of the state's verified information for contemptuous conduct, basically saying, first of all, the state's information has a lot of flaws. To say that either of these guys committed any of the supposed acts willfully is completely incorrect, as we know. They didn't leak the pictures. The pictures were stolen from Brad Rossi's office. This was not either of their fault. This was somebody who was not in integrity. That person is being tried and charged as we speak. And yet they're still trying to find these guys in contempt of court for this, or, you know, find some kind of a remedy to continue to punish them. So that's a part of the challenge. But I have to read one sentence from this because it's very salty and I'm here for it. Finally, were the court to impose, without jurisdiction or authority to do so, any necessarily punitive sanction on the state's information in this criminal case against Mr. Allen, it would be at least the second time the court has interfered with Mr. Allen's 6th and 14th Amendment rights to counsel. The court has... Essentially, you've already effed us once. You're really going to do it again?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they're saying that, first of all, even if you found that there was contempt, what you're saying they did isn't even contemptible. It is... there's a long argument, but basically they've had to get lawyers again because they're being treated unfairly yet again, and they're trying yet again to violate Richard Allen's rights, you know, upon rights, upon rights, upon rights. It's a mountain of them. The other thing that was filed, though, there's been a lot of filings.
And this,
they're also the motion for continuance, like I already said, on that. Part of it is that the state has suddenly dumped a whole bunch of new evidence on them, new discovery that they didn't have before. Why is that? Where has this discovery been? Well,
yeah, why haven't they not had it before?
Good question. But this filing is really something.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a motion to dismiss for destroying exculpatory evidence. Now, let's be real. Is Judge Gold going to dismiss? Fuck no. She's not even going to hear any of this stuff. She's going to do everything she can to hurt these two. That's obvious, but they are creating an appellate record because the appeals in this case will go deep and long-lasting if Richard Allen lives long. Basically, they're saying that pursuant to the 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendments, this case should be dismissed because of a destroying of exculpatory evidence. What exculpatory evidence? Okay. I'm going to read you a few things from the brief. I wish I could read you the whole thing. We don't have time. It's very interesting. In fact, I'll provide a link here in the chat room in case anyone wants to read it. Richard Allen stands accused of murdering two victims on or about February 13th, 2017. Since receiving discovery on this case, the defense has unearthed significant evidence that third parties, these are two people, I don't want to name them on the show because they're not charged with anything. We're just going to call them BH and PW. So BH and PW, there is significant evidence that they were involved in the murders. We've talked about this before. This is the Odenite angle. That evidence is critical to the theory of defense. Basically, what happened is there are documents from the FBI and from the police memorializing an interview with BH. The document says, "The below is an interview summary. It is not intended to be a verbatim account and does not memorialize all statements made during the interview. Communication by the parties in the interview room were electronically recorded. The recording captures the actual words spoken." Okay. Also, there's a document dated February 19th. Now, that was February 17th. The girls died on the 13th. So this is only 3 days after their death. They have this man, BH, in the interview room. On the 19th, they have PW. It also is a document that memorializes their interview. The report does not indicate whether the interview was recorded, although the defense would expect the standard procedures would require video or audio recording of all statements.
Okay. All right.
So the defense came back and said, we want the electronic interview there. That wasn't, those weren't complete. We need to see what exactly was said, right?
Yeah.
Well, there was a mistake made, and all of those interviews that were done early on, they just got recorded over. So we just don't have them. Sorry.
Holy shit.
And they're saying this is exculpatory. These are things that could potentially free Richard Allen. Richard Allen does not know these people. He doesn't know anything about them. So, of course, they asked for these things. Didn't get a response for a long time. Finally, on September 8th, 2023, the prosecutor sent a letter letting them know that there were no audio or videos with absolutely no explanation about why they didn't exist. They were just like, sorry, they don't exist.
What the hell, man? You know that they have their own internal policies that those things have to be recorded and that those things have to be retained. Give me a break.
The level of high profile this case was, really?
Yeah.
So before they could investigate, they got kicked off the case. So there wasn't really anything they were able to do. So since they've come back on, they've again gone, where are those videos? Now the prosecution has dumped a whole bunch of new discovery to the defense. And within that discovery, they discovered a letter cataloging the evidence that they were turning over. They've just been really sketchy with discovery. And Judge Gold just doesn't care. So on page 5, paragraph 5 of the itemized discovery are these words that explain BH's missing videotaped interview and PW's missing interview, if one existed. Due to a DVR program error discovered on 9/20/2017, all recordings up to February 20th, 2017 were recorded over. There is no detectable audio found on this drive. Yep.
How very convenient that it would be this case.
Yep.
And it would be those videotaped interviews
were deleted by the police.
Yeah.
So these guys have a few concerns. First of all, they want to know what other interviews were deleted that they don't know anything about.
Right? How do you trust anything now?
They're talking about key suspects that were grabbed and interviewed very early in the investigation, and there's no record now.
Holy crap.
So they are very...
That is huge and terrifying.
They are very bothered by this, of course. And they're saying, obviously, Richard Allen would definitely want to put these two on the stand and question them, and they don't have access to their interviews in order to do that. This is huge. In any other case, this would be huge.
Yeah. And Judge Gull is probably not going to do one damn thing about it. But right, Lydia, cover up? It's been feeling that way for quite some time now.
Yep. So that's why they're asking to for a dismissal. It's a big mistake on the part of the police and on the part of the state. It's a huge mistake, but they're just acting like it just doesn't matter. So there was something else here I wanted to share. On August 30th, 2023, following depositions in which the state of Indiana and law enforcement learned that the defense believed BH to be an actor in the murders, law enforcement finally re-interviewed him for what is believed to be the first time since 2017. So after they filed the Franks, they pulled him back in and interviewed him again.
I wonder why.
So here's what's really interesting. In 2017, according to the memorialized report, BH told law enforcement that he had never met Abby Williams, who was purportedly dating his son. In 2023, when he talked to law enforcement, he told the interviewer, I barely knew that girl. I only met her once.
Oh, great. So we already know he's a liar.
Therefore, one material and highly relevant contradiction exists. It is therefore plausible that many more contradictions would be available to the defense, but for the state's intentional or negligent failure to preserve all of the evidence.
Yeah. Wow.
It's insane. So yet again, Richard Allen's due process rights are being violated in a pretty egregious way.
Yeah.
And then this just part.
Never quits.
And you guys, I know we're going over. I apologize. We're a little over time for where we go. But I think this stuff is really important. Here's the other part of this that really grabbed me. It has also been discovered that former Rushville police officer Todd Click reached out to Prosecutor McClelland in an attempt to bring his attention to the existence of an 85-page report summarizing the investigation that revolved around BH, PW, and other affiliates. This letter, which landed on Prosecutor McClelland's desk via certified mailing on May 1st, 2023, was not discovered to the defense until 4 months later, on September 8th, 2023, and only after the defense disclosed in depositions that they were aware of the Odinists' ties to the crime scene and the investigation. This failure to disclose on the part of the prosecutor, if not entirely intentional, rises to the level of untimely failure of disclosure of potentially exculpatory evidence. The failure to disclose sheds further suspicion on the absence of the BH and PW interviews referenced herein. Furthermore, as explained in the Franks memo, it appears as if law enforcement, and possibly the prosecutor himself, attempted to conceal the identity of a Purdue professor who contradicts the sworn words of Trooper Jerry Holman and Sheriff Tony Liggett concerning whether the crime scene contained signs of the involvement of an Odinist cult. In more recent discovery, defense also located a prepared search warrant application to AT&T for data contained on BH and PW's mobile devices. Each application states that BH and PW are known members of a religious sect and elements of the murder have potential religious significance. The information being requested is relevant to an ongoing criminal investigation.
My God.
There is no
evidence. Corruption is just unreal.
It's unreal. There's no evidence that the warrant was ever served. Also, the defense has not located any discovery regarding any data contained on BH or PW's 2017 phones or any other electronic devices. It defies logic that law enforcement would conduct forensic examinations of so many other phones in its investigation, yet ignore the phones of BH and PW, who were viewed as suspects within 3 days of the murders and interviewed by law enforcement, who then prepared search warrants for those phones. These suspicious facts further call into question the circumstances surrounding the destruction of key videotaped statements of BH and PW, if it ever existed, and supports Richard Allen's motion to dismiss all charges filed by the state of Indiana. And it goes on, but those are the things that I wanted to share with you guys tonight. I don't even know what to freaking say.
I don't either. Like, what the hell is actually the truth here? Do we have any idea? Will we ever know? Will Richard Allen and his attorneys ever know?
Will Richard Allen even survive this to even get to trial?
I don't know.
They don't have a case. There is nothing linking Richard Allen to this crime. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing except for the bullet that was supposedly buried that they don't even have proof was buried, that maybe was in a gun that was never fired that was at his house.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm not going to trust that.
This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. How or what did Allen do to be charged with this? Damn good question. So I put a link in the chat rooms if you're interested in reading that entire brief. I would, if I were you. It is very interesting. Right, Sandy? Is the judge an Odinist? Is that what's really going on here? Is the
prosecutor an Odinist?
Are all of them? Because we know that a bunch of the guards at both of the prisons he'd been in are.
Yeah.
I don't think the parents have spoken at all. That's a good question. Have they expressed any feelings about this? I don't think they've spoken at all. No. You know, typically the victims' families are in direct communication, frequent communication with the prosecutor. And so whatever the prosecutor is telling them is typically what they listen to and internalize. And so, of course, but these issues in any other courtroom, Heads would have rolled.
Yeah.
I cannot understand why this is happening or what is happening. Mm-hmm. I really can't. I have nothing. But mm-hmm. we'll continue to watch it play out and hope for the best. It's not very often that I'm on the side of the perp, but in this case, I absolutely am.
I know. I am too. Though there's never going to be a clean conviction.
No. No, definitely not. So with that, we had one more thing, and it's very quick. So, Christy, I'm going to ask you to talk to us very quickly about
Breonna Gay.
Breonna Gay, yeah.
If you'll remember, this is Breonna Gay. Breonna Gay was murdered a couple of years ago by two so-called friends. Breonna was 16. These two psychopaths were 15 at the time that they killed her, and they were convicted a while ago, and they were just sentenced just last Friday. So let me tell you a little bit about that really quick. It's Scarlett Jenkinson and Eddie Radcliffe, and they murdered Breonna Gay in a park in Cheshire, England, and that was in February of 2023. So I guess it actually was only a year ago. So they have been sentenced. They've both been found guilty of first-degree murder. Mm-hmm. The judge said that Scarlett Jenkinson was motivated by a deep desire to kill. She's made that very clear. She really wanted to kill somebody. She wanted to know what it felt like. And she picked Breonna. She was given 22 years in prison. She's 16 now. Mm-hmm. Eddie was involved, but for sort of different reasons. He had a problem with Breonna because Breonna was a transgender girl, and he didn't like that. And so he was sentenced to 20 years in prison.
Wow.
What they've put together is that, you know, they lured her to the park through social media. And Eddie started stabbing her, stabbed her three or four times, kind of freaked out, said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to kill anybody. And Scarlett grabbed the knife and stabbed her another 24, 25 times.
Unreal.
Scarlett is absolutely terrifying. It's just scary to me that she will ever get out because she's a psychopath. Breonna Gay's mom
never get out. My God,
you shouldn't. But they're, you know, the sentencing is much different in the UK. Breonna Gay's mother, however, is pretty amazing. She has started a foundation where she's bringing mindfulness meditation into schools and trying to help support better mental health care in the schools. They want to. She feels like, you know, it's a place that there's something that she can do. And she's also working with some politicians on limiting social media access to kids in England. Because, you know, all of this happened over social media. She was they'd actually tried to get her out to kill her one other time, and she decided not to go and didn't show up. And this was their second time. Yeah, so it's a really sad story. But Breonna's mom is a real badass, and she has been very kind to the parents of the murderers and has said that she would be willing to talk with them, and really has been just a badass. So lots of props to her, and I'm glad those kids are going away, but I'm real afraid of what they're going to come out like.
Terrifying. Wow. Well, good on mom. A couple of quick things before we wrap up. JR, thank you. I had not seen that. She said that Libby's mom says she doesn't know what to believe and the police are withholding info. And she believes the police have been lying to her the whole time. Wow. Well,
I don't know how you could not feel that way.
Yep. I mean, we've said it 1,000 times already, but this is not justice. I also wanted to point out that, hey, Kaylin, wanted to point out that... Let's see. Journey to Justice had asked where you can watch the Brian Smith trial. Alaska News Source is a good spot to find live coverage. So I put a link to an article from them from today, but Alaska News Source is what you want to look for. Some of these
cases they are. They're doing a good job of this. But this was new to me. I had not heard of this case.
Yeah, Jay, I think shaming of Jay on Twitter and on YouTube, I think, is showing it too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's places to definitely watch it and talk about it. And we'll be keeping an eye on it too, that we're not going to stream it, but we'll keep an eye on it. So I think we did it. Is that
I think we overdid it, yes.
We have done and did it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So there you go. So we'll be back tomorrow, actually. We have a new Mormon Misdeeds coming out tomorrow. Some interesting stuff going on there. Mostly, you know, in the great state of Utah and beyond. But
yeah.
That's what's up. So thanks, you guys. Please take good care of yourselves. We will be back. This has been yet another production of the True Crime Squad.
Bye, everybody.